And so the problem that Brindley had when the canal came to Castlefield was how to get the coal from down here to up here into Manchester.
My name is Martin and welcome back to another video, Medlock number 11. So you're joining us on a journey where we're following Manchester's River Medlock from just outside the city centre at Phillips Park to where it meets the River Irwell. Now it was never going to be from the source, it was always about following a river through the city centre, and that's what I wanted to do, and it's been quite a fascinating journey. So here we are at number 11 and this is Castlefield, and I've said at the beginning, where is the river? And that's because it's disappeared and it's now underneath us, probably just here actually in a tunnel underneath us. So where did we leave off in the last video? So in episode 10 and in the subsequent correction video we did about the River Tib, we saw how the River Medlock flows into the diversion tunnel. Now, you can see to the right of this picture, or this image, that the River Medlock used to flow onwards into Castlefield underneath Knott Mill Bridge. The date we've got on the diversion tunnel is around about the 1830s, and I'll tell you the reason for it being built shortly. But it's difficult to pin down a date on that tunnel because it was modified over the years, but around about the 1830s. This picture illustrates how the River Medlock used to flow onwards underneath Knott Mill Bridge and into the Castlefield Basin. And indeed, we know there was a set of sluice gates where they could choose whether to send it onwards into Castlefield or down into the diversion tunnel. Those sluice gates, as we know, have subsequently gone missing. This 1794 map shows how the Castlefield Basin exploited the natural course of the River Medlock. Now, if you're going to have a river running directly into a canal, and you'll see the Bridgewater Canal branching off to the left there, you need to build in some sort of flood defence mechanism. And the cloverleaf diagram you see at the top of that map was that flood defence. It was a weir. We'll come to that later. But that weir dropped the River Medlock back into its old course and it ran onwards towards the River Irwell. So what has happened to the River Medlock? We know it's gone into the Medlock diversion tunnel, but where does that tunnel go? Well, this is the modern day map and you can see that the river disappears at Knott Mill at the red X. It then reappears at the purple X to the top of this map. And where it re-emerges, that will be Medlock episode 12. But for now, we're concerned with where the river has gone and Castlefield Basin. This is a map from the 1800s, and it's one of the rare maps that shows the route of the Medlock diversion tunnel. And surprisingly, it goes on for quite a way. It's quite a long tunnel. So the cursor's at Knott Mill there, and you can see it follows the route of the Medlock diversion tunnel. It's quite faint on this map, but you'll see it swings round and goes underneath the Castlefield Basin and underneath the various canal arms, underneath the later built railway viaducts, goes towards the Castlefield Arena area, if anyone knows that part of Castlefield, and then re-emerges at Potato Wharf, where it follows the original course of the River Medlock a short way down towards the River Irwell. Now, can we get in the Medlock Diversion Tunnel? Well, it's not advisable. As you can imagine, it's a confined space. The full force of the river is in there, and it's quite fast flowing. So we can't get in the Medlock Diversion Tunnel at this point. Maybe later in episode 12, we might get a chance to take a look at it, but that's speculative at the moment. So what better way to see Castlefield than by boat? So our old mates Kev and John have invited us down on a Sunday afternoon to take a leisurely sail into Castlefield on the kayaks. Now, the advantages of sailing in and using the kayaks is that it gets us into places that you wouldn't normally be able to see, and we can investigate things from the past. Today's team is Kev and John, who very kindly provided the kayaks, and we've got Gary and we've got James as well, who came along and they're in the Blue Pig. We wanted to call it the Black Pig, but we called it the Blue Pig in the end. So off we go, see what we can find. Just push downwards, don't push it outwards away from the bank.
There's no friction, so it'll just move out. You know,
and they're in. Right, so we're going to have the plan is to have a relaxed sail into Castlefield, and I'll be able to show you some of the parts of it that you wouldn't normally see off the paths, and we'll just see where we end up. But weather's, it's been throwing it down, honestly, so that it's only just stopped the rain. Hopefully the rain will keep off and we'll have a nice chilled sail. So we got in the kayaks roughly about where the green X is at St George's Island, and we're going the direction of the purple arrow towards Castlefield from the west, heading eastwards. But first off, you see where the green arrow is. That is the old Hume Locks, which we've been to from the other side in a different video. So let's go and take a look at St George's Island and Hume Locks. So this is Hume Locks, and we have a date of about 1838. They were constructed so that you could get boats off the Bridgewater Canal down to a very short navigable section of the River Medlock, and then out onto the Irwell, and if you go left, you go westwards and out onto the Manchester Ship Canal. Now in a state of disrepair, they were very, very important back in the day. Clock the view through the arch, because you're going to see a very different view from some old photos I'm going to show you.
What is scary is how high you are, because you're sort of like sat on water, but you're sort of like above all that. And last time we did a kayaking video, we were down there in the locks. You can see where we are now. But yeah,
so Kev, being more adept at getting in and out of the boat than me, I tend to fall in when I try and get in and out, took the GoPro and got some shots of Hume Locks from the top. Now again, you wouldn't normally see this because this part is inaccessible on foot, but you can see the size of the things and the depth. Really fascinating to see, to be honest with you. Thank you.
Have you? So these are all the bars around Castlefield and everything. So I don't think the geese are impressed. But look at the stone on the bottom of that that building there. And that would have been two great big loading bays, that. There you go, see 1825 there. Sorry. And you can make that out. It's very difficult filming when I'm in this boat.
So basically we're heading towards Knott Mill, to where the Medlock originally joined the Castlefield Basin, because I want to demonstrate or explain why they built the diversion tunnel. So here we are at Knott Mill Bridge with the diversion tunnel behind us. The river is now to the left in its tunnel. And as we head through between the new apartment blocks, we're going to turn right in a moment and you're going to see the little bit of the basin, and you'll see just how silted up it is. And this is one of the problems of running a river into a canal basin. So as the camera turns to the right now, you'll see where the tyre is, very silted up. And even the kayaks, we were running aground in the kayaks. But as we turn round now to the right, you'll see this apartment block. We're going to sail underneath that apartment block and firstly take a look at the other side of Knott Mill Bridge. We'll see the old arch that still exists. And then we'll look at the reasons why the Medlock Diversion Tunnel was built. So it was quite fascinating, to be honest with you, as we sail underneath here. And you had to go in at a certain side so you didn't hit the bottom. And I didn't want to get out of the kayak here because, again, every time you get in and out, there's a risk of falling in. And also, you don't know if it's sinky sand underneath you. But here we go. We can just see Knott Mill Bridge emerging here.
You see Knott Mill Bridge down there, where Kev is. So, dark and dirty. And there it is.
This was amazing to see, because up at street level, you don't even realise you're on a bridge. And there looks like there was an older, lower bridge, possibly. And then an extension, a width extension. You can see possibly two bridges butt up to each other. That's my explanation for that. I could be wrong, but I think we're looking at two bridges there, a later widening of the road. But really looking into the past there. So we had to quickly reverse out and we'll crack on with the rest of the canal basin. So here at Knott Mill, the River Medlock originally joined Castlefield Basin. And as we turn the boat round, I suppose we're carrying on now. This is where we should have started the video. But why did they build the Medlock Diversion Tunnel? Well, I'm going to read you an old newspaper report. I'm going to start it well into the report. The construction of this tunnel has been found necessary in consequence of the canal being nearly filled with mud and dirt from the impurity of the water of the Medlock, a very small proportion of which is only required for the supply of the canal. So they didn't need much water. They certainly didn't need the full-on Medlock running into it. It's now the early 1800s and there's factories springing up all along the Medlock, pumping out filth into it. So the Medlock is now silting up the canal basin and it's bringing in filth and effluent and factory discharges from further upstream. And they didn't want it. The Bridgewater Canal didn't want it. Here's another report. A tunnel under Castlefield down into the River Irwell, and which tunnel is capable of taking the whole of the waters from the river. It was also in contemplation at that period to arrange with the Rochdale Canal Company, which had later been built, to pass down their canal a larger quantity of pure water to supply any deficiency that might be experienced in the Bridgewater Canal. So, with the subsequent building of the Rochdale Canal, they found themselves a new water supply. The Medlock was no longer required. Possibly they kept the option, i.e. the sluice gates, but the diversion tunnel was built and you could send the Medlock away and away from the basin, and you could bring pure water in from the Rochdale Canal, which was fed by reservoirs up in the Pennines. And there you go, the river has disappeared and we don't see it again during this episode. So it's the late 1700s, the beginning of the canal building frenzy. And the Duke of Bridgewater, who owns the mines at Worsley, wanted to get his coal into Manchester. So with his consultant, James Brinley and John Gilbert, they built the Bridgewater Canal and the boats sailed in with the loads of coal into Castlefield Basin. But they were now presented with another issue.
Right, Castlefield, quite an interesting place, and I'm not an expert on this place, I know little bits. This is David, I used to work with David, but in a former life in the 80s,
1984,
you was an archaeologist.
Yeah.
Right, you worked for the who?
For the Greater Manchester Archaeology Unit. I worked there for a year. It was an MSC scheme, which was a job creation scheme in the 80s, Thatcher's Britain, 1 in 10. and it was a massive MSC scheme, and there were offshoots of it all around Castlefield, Castleshaw, Stockport, Wigan. And our very loose remit was to come here to Castlefield. We dug a bit of the Roman fort up there at the top, and we sort of tried and looked at the surviving warehouses and tried to find the canal arms that had all been filled in.
Brilliant. It sounds like my perfect job.
And so the problem that Brindley had when the canal came to Castlefield was how to get the coal from down here to up here into Manchester. And it's only the space of about 50 foot, but it could have been a mountain. Yeah. It could have been a mountain as far as they were concerned. I mean, they say that the price of coal dropped by a half when the Bridgewater Canal opened. No one knows if that's exactly true, but certainly it was a lot cheaper and there was tons of it. You could drag 10 times as much coal along Bridgewater Canal with a single horse as you could on a horse and cart. So it was a massive supply of coal. There's also a massive demand. Up in Manchester, 1760, there's about 25,000 odd people living there.
So we've got tons of coal now easily transported from the mines at Worsley into Castlefield. But as David says, the problem was then getting it up to street level. And there was a further problem, because Castlefield wasn't in the city centre.
And Manchester as we know it developed where the Irk meets the Irwell, where the canal, where the cathedral was, and where the marketplace was. That was Manchester. So it was a distance vertically and then horizontally as well. So, as I say, those 25,000 people, in 100 years after the Bridgewater Canal opened, something like 300,000 people lived in Manchester. The Industrial Revolution is starting, not just here, but little pockets. It was a massive technological, social and political movement. People say, this is the birth of the Industrial Revolution. It grew up in lots of different places, lots of different technological inventions, the steam engine, the canals, the railways, the factories. It was a massive movement. Part of it started here, certainly, and with the Bridgewater Canal, the first canal of the industrial age, that's one of the places where it began. So when the coal came here to Manchester, came here to Castlefield, the problem was getting it up the hill, because Castlefield is built on a hill. We're down here and Manchester's up there.
This incline road that was built from canal water level up to street level was one of the ways they tried to overcome the problem of height. Now, not a problem for a modern day vehicle, but for a horse and cart pulling a load, that was a massive task. But this problem drove great innovation, and this innovation was seen in one of the warehouses, the Grocer's Warehouse. It was pulled down in the 1960s, and what a great shame it was pulled down. Here it is, here's that same site in the 1960s, and all you can see is the rear tunnels where the boats used to pull in and be unloaded. Here's a picture of the site in the 1980s, and the chap leaning against the wall is David, who we've just been talking to in his former life as an archaeologist. So in the 1980s, they reconstructed the Grocer's Warehouse, and thank God that they did. And this is it. And even though it's a reconstruction, at the back end of it is some of the original parts of the old Grocer's Warehouse. So it was a place that I very much wanted to get into. So the kayaks came in very, very handy, even though it was a bit of a task.
Right, I'm going to try and go underneath here now. Shitting hell. stuck. Shit! That was a sod to get under. Here we go again. Right, I'm going to duck my head right down now. Okay, so we're in. So this is, like I say, a mock-up, but it's quite interesting. And all the old machinery is still in here. I can feel the boat hitting the bottom of the the bottom of the thing. It's a bugger to navigate. And then behind there is the Rochdale Canal. Yeah. I don't know where all this water's coming from. You can see the rock, see how it's built on the rock. Incredible, isn't it? Don't ask me where that's coming from because I don't actually know.
Now, like I say, behind that wall is the Rochdale Canal, but that wall never used to be there because this used to carry on, as I will show you shortly. But first of all, there's more to look at in here.
So I'm not sure how much of this is original, to be honest with you, but built on the actual the bedrock there. Well, we're going to go up there where Kev is, if I can master getting out of the boat. And there's some machinery I want to show you. Right, so look at this.
Now, as wonderful as this is to look at, it is actually mock-up. We were a bit unsure at the start, but this is a 1980s recreation of the lifting gear, the very innovative lifting gear that lifted the goods up to street level back in the day in the late 1700s. And this is why the grocer's warehouse was truly a forerunner of its kind, because you had this problem and this is what they employed to get the goods upwards. Now, I was thinking to myself, how does a water wheel operate in a canal? Because there's no flow. How do you drive a water wheel? And then I realized that when we pulled in, there was a feature that I'd missed, and this is how they drove the water wheel. That little grate there that I almost missed on the way in is directly above where the water wheel is, or the mock-up water wheel is. Of course, we're talking late 1700s. The Medlock is still flowing into Castlefield Basin. It hasn't been diverted yet. So there was probably enough push and enough flow into the basin for it to drop down that grate and drive the water wheel that in turn drove a gearing and lifting system to get goods up from water level up to street level. Quite fantastic. So that's how it worked, and it took me a bit to work it out. But let's take a closer look at this reconstruction. Right, so down there is a tunnel. Jamie's on the GoPro, I'm going to have to go down there and see if we can take a look down here. Down the dodgy ladder. I'm going to show you this tunnel down here.
Look at that. Look at that. Now, I can't get down there. It's hard to access. But where on earth does that go? Looks some sort of water soft, doesn't it? The shape of it and the way it's got a channel in the middle of it.
Now, I'm very pleased to say that that little tunnel surprised us and is very much an original feature. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely incredible.
This is a drawing of where we are, the grocer's warehouse in the late 1700s. I can't stress how innovative this building was. There were other buildings like this dotted around the country, but this was one of the first places that had this unique lifting mechanism, this water wheel that allowed the gearing to lift goods up to multiple levels in the warehouse. And it was all down to Mr. Brindley and Mr. Gilbert and their engineering knowledge, really, and of course James Brindley's knowledge of water power. Let's take another look around. The temptation was too much, and Kev sort of like pioneered the way, and sure enough, it wasn't long until I decided to follow him. I wasn't sure how deep it was, but looking back now, it had to be at least half the water wheel is submerged in water, or half that gearing system is submerged in water. So it must have been at least 3-4 foot. I was determined I wasn't going to fall in, so I'm clinging for dear life onto all this gear. But I was so glad I went down there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to need this footage, James.
Yeah, it's just just if it's a good quality or not. You put your hand, you can put your leg right round.
How far did you go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, we're in. Just got to navigate this. What's it like there?
In the trough, but it will, you might see my footprints and that, you know.
Yeah.
But you don't see a footprint there in the trough.
Right. So there's the tunnel.
Put a few stickers for you, whatever.
Nice one.
Okay, so I would imagine that this took the runoff water from the water wheel outwards. This is the drainage stuff. Some rope marks in the top there. Don't know what they were, but as we go in, my camera didn't like it. I didn't have any lights with me. I didn't expect to be doing this today, so I didn't bring any lights with me, just the lights on my phone, unfortunately. I could have kicked myself because I've got work lights and everything for this type of thing. But anyway, let's take a look, see what we can see down here.
I'm walking in the mud. I don't know where it goes. Shit. Wet feet. And I know you can't see much, but opens out into like a chamber here. Wow. You can't see a thing. Shit.
Open right up there. You know, yeah. Proper bolt up, you know, when you go out.
Oh, mate, I can't see. The camera can't see.
Right, so I went manual on the camera and maxed out the settings. ISO, exposure, the lot, and I managed to get some photos inside here, and finally I got some video. It was a chamber, absolutely fascinating.
Right, there we go, we got it.
to just go slow. You see this water going there? And coming in. You just about see what's going on in there. See how it's rock.
There's no lamp up here, so you know.
There's a bit of light.
Oh, it's a rock. It's a rock on it.
Yeah, wow.
Whoa.
I wonder where that water, what water must have been from the canal. Incredible. It's just turning around there, wasn't it? Don't fall. And then there. It's quite a big room, isn't it? Quite a chamber, isn't it?
Walking back out along the tunnel, this was the sight that greeted us, and I thought it made a great picture.
Did you see anything down there?
Yeah, we saw it. It was like a chamber. There was water coming down.
That one on the left, not the way they that opens up, doesn't it?
Yeah, still a left one.
Dropping down again, that one's coming back. Oh, yeah. You can drop back there, too, with the right.
No, you can't. Go down, it's all fancy in there.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That was amazing. I'm filthy, I've got wet feet. But I never knew or would have expected to find that there. That was incredible.
Got the whole issue with the canal was to cut down on your transport costs, and yet when it got to Manchester, again he's piling it on horses and carts. Almost defeats the object.
Right.
And not only that, there's a contemporary account of people walking from Manchester with wheelbarrows, coming down the hill, filling them up with coal, and then pushing them back up the hill. Now, an 18th century wheelbarrow is made of wood. Its wheel is made of wood. It's got an iron tyre. Yeah. It's heavy enough to begin with. You start pushing it
on
up cobbles. That hill. On cobbled. Well, whether it was cobbled even, I don't know.
Well,
whether he cobbled it then, I don't know.
Right.
Maybe even just a muddy track, I don't know.
Right.
But even so, this was incredibly unpopular. It didn't matter how cheap that coal was. If you couldn't get it into people's houses, they could have been giving it away.
Right.
But they couldn't. And so Brindley came up with this astonishing solution, and that was the coal tunnel.
Right, so when we say coal tunnel, what we're talking about, what I know of is the grocer's warehouse tunnel, which I've shown you. I'm probably going to show you now. Now, where you saw me go into those two arches, they're now bricked up at the back, but they ran through, or one of them ran through. Behind there is the Rochdale Canal. But onwards, there's an arm off the Rochdale Canal that goes into a tunnel that I know as Grocer's Warehouse Tunnel. And this was what you're saying was the ingenious bit. The boats came along, unloaded, or carried on along that canal arm. And you know what's through that tunnel, don't you?
Allow me to explain, and back to the map of Castlefield. As we zoom in here, you'll see the main basin. And to the right, you'll see a very straight canal. That's the Rochdale Canal. but you'll see a little spur off the Rochdale Canal, just where it says Deansgate. You'll see a spur. Now, see that spur is in line with where I've just gone into Grocer's Warehouse. Now, before the Rochdale Canal, that spur carried on into the hillside from the Grocer's Warehouse and into the rock, into the hillside, and it was built by James Brindley to take goods further into Manchester. I'm going to quote some information now from some papers, and we'll try and look into that a little bit further. So this is the back of the Grocer's Warehouse. Remember, the Rochdale Canal wasn't here at the time we're talking about. This all predates Rochdale Canal. So there's the spur, and it came directly from the back of the Grocer's Warehouse and went into the hillside there, into the rock. Now, this was built by Brindley, as I will demonstrate. It's known as Grocer's Warehouse Tunnel. Now, it's filthy, it's an absolute mess, and it's embarrassing to show it to you. But this thing is so old, it's incredible. It predates the Rochdale Canal. I can't comment on the mess, I'm not interested in it. Let's just comment on the story. It's such a shame. If you really want to get that cleaned up, speak to the Canal and Rivers Trust or the City Council. There's no point making any comments on my video. But that tunnel is so old. What was it for? What was it about? Let's look into it a little bit further. So before we carry on, I'm going to name my sources of information. A lot of this information about the Grocer's Warehouse and the Grocer's Warehouse Tunnel is based on research done by Michael Neville and Terry Wyke. Some of the pictures I've got from their papers and a lot of the information, as well as anecdotal information from David, because he had first-hand experience when he was working in this area as an archaeologist.
Well, I've been down that tunnel.
You've been down that tunnel? You were joking?
No.
Because I've considered walking down there, and I was like, I thought, oh my God, so you, how did you get down there?
Well, my very first day at the archaeology unit,
right.
I'm not the tallest person, so they said, just go down there and see where it goes. So they gave me a hard hat, and me and someone else, we clambered down with a torch. We got down as far as we could. I can't quite remember how far it was, and it was, whether it was silted up or bricked up, I can't remember, but it finished, certainly. And you can tell that whatever it was destroyed when they built that viaduct.
So when you say viaduct, you mean it above it, above the entrance is the viaduct, yeah. Isn't there? Right, yeah. So you mean that viaduct, yeah, okay. So you went down the tunnel. How high?
I can't remember.
I need details.
It was 30 years ago, for God's sake. But what we do know is the original level of that tunnel was much lower. It looks like an arm of the Rochdale, but it's not. It's nothing to do with the Rochdale. The Rochdale just cuts through it. And you have to imagine what that area would have looked like before the Rochdale was built and before the viaducts were built, when it was essentially a cliff. And it cut through the cliff about 600 yards, and it finished in a spot just up there below Bridgewater Street.
This is a letter published in the Manchester Mercury, 1765, and it documents the problems at Castlefield. From the wharf at this place, the poor of Manchester fetch great quantities of coal in wheelbarrows, and Mr. Brindley, in order to remove the inconvenience of them carrying them up Castle Hill, is driving a large tunnel through the centre of this hill, into which he intends to introduce his barges and by a crane, which is to be worked by a box water wheel. He proposes to land the coals close to this town. Okay, so he's building that tunnel, the Grocer's Warehouse Tunnel. At the end of that one is going to be another water wheel. So where does that tunnel go? Let me just show you on the map. There you go, there's the spur. Now, it's wrongly called a spur because it doesn't come off the Rochdale Canal. Like we say, it predates the Rochdale Canal, but it goes under the streets as far as Bridgewater Street. There was a little wharf and a water wheel.
So there must have been a flow through that tunnel to drive a water wheel. Did you see the water wheel?
No.
It'd gone by then?
That's gone. Gone years ago.
Okay.
We never got that far.
Okay, so we'll conclude this now. So our tunnel went as far as Bridgewater Street, where there were three shafts that dropped down to a water wheel and some lifting mechanism and coal and goods were lifted up to street level. In 2007, there was some construction work and they uncovered one of those shafts. I've got a picture of it for you here. Now, what they did was they basically filled it with concrete. So they just managed to get a picture of the outline of the shaft. But that was what was left. The builders filled it with concrete and all this has now since gone. But there was a tunnel that took the water from that drove that water wheel at the end of the grocer's warehouse tunnel back to the Medlock. Where that is, whether that's still intact, I do not know. It would have been a very small tunnel, probably long since gone, but absolutely fascinating. This is Arthur Young. He was an agriculturalist and he's famous for writing a book about his travels around France, but he also did a fair bit of travelling around Britain as well. He seemed to have a bit of a preoccupation with manure and dung, but then again he was an agriculturalist, God bless him. But he published a book in 1770 and it's called A Six-Month Tour Through the North of England. Now, he describes things really well. He goes to farms and he goes to villages and he talks about work, the work that people did and the villages, and he describes how many people lived in the village. But he visited Manchester and we'll go to the section of the book where he mentions him visiting the Bridgewater Canal. So Arthur Young writes, and it's old English, so I need to try and get it right because I normally get this wrong. From Altrincham, I took the road to Manchester with design not only to view the manufacturers of that town, but to make it my headquarters from thence to go the tour of His Grace the Duke of Bridgewater's navigation, about which such wonders are abroad. If only half are true, I shall not be a little entertained. So he's expecting big things. He's heard big things about the Bridgewater Canal and the subsequent infrastructure around there. Now he goes to our tunnel, the grocer's warehouse tunnel, and it sounds like he goes down there and he describes what he sees. Now he's going to talk about starvationers, the boat starvationers, and he's going to talk about how the coal was hauled up. But it's fascinating because it's an eyewitness account. Let's read this. So he's talking about the starvation of boats now that have come from Worsley. They enter the subterraneous canal and move on until they come under the well. This is at Bridgewater Street. There they stop and the ropes which are fixed to the crane above, being let down with hooks at the end, are fastened to the boxes which are ironed for that purpose and then drawn up. The power of this crane is that of water wheel, contrived in a very simple manner. The best way of explaining it will be by a little sketch which he draws. But remark that I only draw this from an idea. The cavern in which the wheels work, being underground and below the surface of the subterraneous canal, and all the light I had was that of a farthing candle. Fantastic. So he's bought his little candle for a farthing, gone down there and tried to describe and sketch what he saw. And that was probably in 1769 because the book was published in 1770. So a first-hand account by Arthur Young in about 1769 of what he saw at the bottom of that shaft on Bridgewater Street in Manchester. Okay, so this is Arthur Young's drawing, and I'm going to try and make sense of it. I have studied it. I'm going to try and make sense of it, if not only for myself. I understand, because of the weird orientation and perspective, it won't make sense to everyone, but I'll try and point out the main things. The green X, I think, is the River Medlock entering Castlefield Basin. It's not the normal way we would look at it. Over to the right, you've got the Cloverleaf Overflow Weir built by Brinley. The Grocer's Warehouse Tunnel is at the end of Blue X, and you can see he's drawn the shafts at Blue X, but they're on the side, and he's drawn three shafts there, and you've got the winching mechanism portrayed up in the top left-hand corner. Bottom right-hand corner, it looks like some kind of trapdoor that he's drawn. The white X shows the Bridgewater Canal going westwards out to Worsley. Now, here's the interesting bit. The red X shows the water suff, the runoff from the water wheel at Blue X. The red X shows that tunnel going back towards the River Medlock. Now, that's the bit I'm interested in because that must still exist. It must be very deep level, but somewhere in Manchester, that little short Red X tunnel runs towards another tunnel that takes the runoff water to the River Medlock. So make sense of that what you will. But like I say, the orientation's bizarre, but I've tried to make sense of it. Just pause it if you need to study it, and you might have to re-watch that bit. I could be very wrong. I think I've got it right. But like I say, he drew a lot of it in the dark, and it's from his own head, so it's his own orientation. Thank you, Mr. Young. Your input is greatly valid, but we've tried to make sense of that as best we can. So that was the Grocer's Warehouse and the Grocer's Warehouse Tunnel. And as we leave that area now, we head on into Castlefield. We'll take a quick look at the Rochdale Canal. Obviously, this came later, but it did provide cleaner water for Castlefield Basin.
Right, so this is the Rochdale Canal, the start of the Rochdale Canal. You see the lock gates there? Just trying to steer the boat. They go up to the lock gates. Can you imagine if those lock gates went now? Scary stuff.
So I have to thank John, who is the Manc drone guy on YouTube, for getting us the wonderful drone footage that he has done during this video. And we'll now head over to the Giant's Basin, which is the final feature in Castlefield. This is the overflow.
So there's the Giant's Basin, and that takes overflow water. You can't see it, I'll show you proper when I'm up back out of the boat. Takes overflow water down towards the Medlock. You've probably seen me, if you watch my videos, I came here and did some magnet fishing. All we did was pull out scaffolding poles. But initially designed by James Brindley, it used to be a clover leaf shape, and that was so the surface area exposed to the canal was quite increased. And obviously its purpose is to drain, it's an overflow for the canals. Sometimes in the 1800s, this got redesigned.
Okay, so the cloverleaf weir designed by James Brindley, it had to be redesigned because apparently it wasn't very good. I think that the leaf bits that increased the circumference of the weir were too shallow and they got silted up, and so it didn't serve the purpose. So like I say, early 1800s, it got completely redesigned and rebuilt. If you're wondering why the writing on this sort of sketch slash map is in German, it's because another visitor came to Manchester and made observations and drawings. He was called Johann Haugru. That's all I know about him. And this is his famous drawing of Brindley's cloverleaf weir. Couple of things to note. If you notice, the outflow back to the Medlock is kind of like, it comes off in a kind of like circular fashion, a meandering line. Now, Arthur Young drew it like that as well, so it must have been the case. This might be exaggerated. Remember, these things weren't particularly accurate and they weren't to scale, but the outflow now is a much more straight tunnel that goes back to the Medlock. And quite nice and interesting in the top right-hand corner that he's included the Grocer's Warehouse there as well. But there you go, sketched at the time by Johann Haugru, Brindley's cloverleaf weir mechanism.
I'll show you the little archway, which is underneath here, and it runs out to the River Medlock. So the Medlock, as I've said, joined at Knott Mill. You've got a river flowing into a canal basin. You needed to drain it, you needed an overflow, and that's what the Giant's Basin does. Medlock's behind us, and I'll show you in Medlock 12 where this, the overflow for this, comes out.
Okay, so we've finally done it. We've made a journey across Castlefield from Red X to Purple X, and where Purple X is, the Medlock reappears from the tunnel, and that will be the subject of Medlock episode 12. So there you go. Let's have a final word from David.
So in this video, I've been showing a lot of pictures of Castlefield in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, and it's a bit of a wasteland, to be honest with you. It's kind of like a poor relation to what it was, filled with old timber yards, few coal yards and things. But it became, in the 80s, the world's first urban heritage park, and it was developed into what it is today. And I've got to admit, it's quite a beautiful place today. You know a little bit about that, don't you, about that development? Can you sort of tell us about that? When did he start the development?
I'm not quite sure. I think the urban heritage park, it all started probably in 1980, which is the 150th anniversary of the Liverpool Road station. And that started a bit of interest in opening up Liverpool Road as a museum and as the Museum of Science and Industry. So the council got interested, and a number of people got interested, and Jim Ramsbottom, who was a Manchester bookmaker, who had a shop just on Liverpool Road, bought up loads of these warehouses, loads of this land. I don't know how much it cost, but he was paying rates on them for years and years and years. And if it hadn't been for him, a lot of these buildings would have been knocked down. I don't think he's ever really been given the credit that he deserves for that. He was a bookmaker, and he made a bet, didn't he, really? He bet that eventually that investment would get developed and make a return.
Yeah.
And it did.
Wow.
And it's all, in many ways, it's thanks to him that we sat here today, I think.
Wow.
So, David, thanks so much for talking to us. Good to see you again. Not seen you for a while. Thank you very much, David.
Thank you.
Wow, what can I say? I never expected that a little trip out on the kayaks would lead us to those finds and inspire all that information to come forth. So bear with me before you go, because I would like to thank a few people, because I couldn't have made this video without Kev and John for the kayaks and the inspiration to finally make Medlock number 11. Gary and James for your moral support coming along with me, and for the additional filming when I was down in the wheel pit. Thanks so much for that. David, what could we have done without your historical direction? Thank you very much for coming along to Castlefield and telling us everything that you know about the area. Danny Ranks for your wonderful artwork that we're watching now. The Mank Drone Guy, thank you, John, because your drone footage topped off the video wonderfully. And of course, Aurora B. Polaris for his music, which is called Forgotten, but it's actually become the theme tune of the Medlock series now. And of course, it goes without saying, we'd like to thank James Brindley, John Gilbert, Francis Edgerton, Arthur Young, and the entire workforce that built these tunnels, warehouses, and canals. You have left us one hell of a legacy, and we thank you very, very much. Thank you, everybody, that has helped and supported me. Take care. Hopefully I'll see you very soon in the next video, and then eventually we'll crack on and get Medlock number 12 done, and we'll finish the series. Thanks for watching and bearing with this video. See you soon.